Welcome to our final session with Professor John Burgess, coming to us live from Germany. Today's topic is the special hope that Christians have. But before we begin, I'd like to tell you about what's coming up next. Jim Davison, former associate pastor at Westminster, will address the mystery of the Trinity. Jim has spent decades thinking and teaching about the Trinity. So we're fortunate that he's willing to share his thoughts on God as Trinity and to engage our questions. He welcomes everyone's questions. So over the next 4 weeks, we'll perhaps enrich our lives of faith by learning more about God as Trinity. And now we'll go back to Germany for our final report from John Burgess.
Thank you, Sarah, and glad that we can gather again this way. This week, I'm in a small town in that area of Germany called Franken, so not too far from the former East and West German border, the former Iron Curtain. Of course, all of that is away now. And today is a special holiday in Germany, celebrating the reunification of Germany on October 3rd, 1990, 31 years ago, that the wall was not simply taken down, but also the two Germanys became one nation again. The Chancellor of Germany, Angela Merkel, who's actually ending her tenure as chancellor. She will be going into retirement, and there were elections last week that will determine the new chancellor. But she gave a major speech today in front of the German parliament, remembering those events of more than 30 years ago now that are so important to Germans. So we keep our German Christian brothers and sisters in mind as they remember the special events of German history and the reunification of their country. Let's open now with a word of prayer. Lord, we pause, we give you thanks for this Lord's Day, this day that is yours, this day on which you call us to pause, to place our hope and trust again through your Son, Jesus Christ. Thank you for the opportunity to gather in this way, all who are participating. We pray your blessing as we think together about the way of our churches into the future. We pray in Christ's name, amen. Let's take just a moment to review where we have come over the past weeks. I'm reporting to you from various places in Germany where I have been doing research, actually about the church in the former East Germany, but now also about the church in the new reunited Germany. And the first week I was in Wittenberg, Germany, the heart of the Reformation, where Martin Luther in 1517 mailed his 95 theses to the door of the cathedral church. And I reported how in Wittenberg today, it's only a tiny percentage of the population that's still involved in the church. The majority of that time has become the minority of today. The birthplace of the Reformation has become a place where Protestants or Christians of any stripe are a tiny group. And often they're seen to be something like oddballs, maybe even religious fanatics. What does it mean to communicate the gospel? What does it mean to be salt of the earth, as we concluded that first session together, to be a tiny minority, but a minority that can still bring something into society as a whole, can be a flavoring factor, if we use the image of salt, but can still make some kind of profound difference, even in its small minority status. Well, we talked about salt, Christians as salt, the first week, and then the second week we talked about the enduring symbolism of the Christian faith in countries such as Germany that had centuries of a Christian culture and where there are still churches and the signs of a Christian culture from the past, where people even in small villages take great pride in restoring their churches, recovering bells that were lost at the time of World War I or World War II, when the bells were melted down for armaments, but rebuilding the churches, recovering the bells, taking care of the church cemeteries, that there's still something that endures a Christian culture, even when Christians become a minority. And I suggested that these remnants of the past are not just historical markers, but perhaps function as vague reminders. When the bells toll in a German town, as they regularly do at noontime or at 6 p.m. in the evening, perhaps people pause for a moment. Or when they look at a church spire rising above the rest of the town, perhaps there's some vague memory that there's a different dimension to life, that there's something more than business as usual, efficiency, politics. Christians as salt, church buildings as symbols, and then last week, we tried to make the connection to what goes on inside those buildings. We spoke particularly about one congregation in Berlin, the Church of Reconciliation, that has been rebuilt in what was once the no man's land in the area of the Berlin Wall, right in the no man's land between East and West Berlin, a church that calls society to reconciliation, the reconciliation of East and West German, reconciliation between new immigrants and native Germans, reconciliation in societies that are deeply polarized politically, which is also increasingly the case here in Germany. So the particular witness that Christians can make, even as a minority, and especially this openness, this reconciling presence, this invitation to experience the church as a place that is reliable, trustworthy, a place where people can live peaceably with one another. Today, then, as Sarah said, our title, what will guide us, is the thought of the special hope that Christians have. Of course, the hope for change is also a political reality. The hope for personal success is something that individuals carry with them. But what is the particular hope, the special hope that Christians represent by virtue of their faith in God through Jesus Christ? This hope that there is a life beyond this life. By that, I don't mean simply what might happen after a person's death, though Christians certainly ponder that mystery, but even now, that there's a life beyond this life, there's a God who promises to be Emmanuel, a hope because of the God who has come into history, a hope that that God among us opens new perspectives, new horizons gives people life and possibilities where they could not yet see them. What is the special hope that Christians can represent to their societies when Christians are a minority, a seemingly disappearing minority, and yet live as a people of hope? So that theme today, salt, symbolism, reconciliation, and how all of that then is a witness to the special hope that Christians have.
John,
now, I would, yes.
If you have an easy way to plug in your cable, occasionally we're getting a little bit of slowness or hesitation in your connection.
Okay.
It's very occasional.
Okay. That will take me about 3 minutes. Do you want to hold on?
Ted, can you hear me?
It's probably not worth it. I can hear you, John Wilson.
We're having no problem.
I don't have any problem.
Let's soldier on.
Okay. We'll see. And if you miss something, just let me know, Ted, okay? I can easily repeat.
I'm not having any problem.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. So I'd like to give you a few examples. And this is not to say that German Christians are doing something radically new or unique. Much of what you will see will remind you of what congregations are already doing in the United States. But I hope that this will also stimulate our thinking about the special hope that we as Christians can bring into our society. All right, so Ted, if we would turn now to the slides. Yes, all right. So the special hope that Christians have. Let's go on to the next slide. You remember last week that I introduced you to Pastor Thomas Yoitner, the pastor of the Church of Reconciliation in Berlin. And the hope that his ministry represents, the hope that the church can be a place of reconciliation in a polarized society. Next slide. So the Church of Reconciliation in that former no man's land between East and West, with the cemetery on one side, the memorial site on the other side, the worship that's celebrated in the garden, where people from 65 different nations have their flower beds, this living salt symbolism, witness to the hope the Christians have of God with us. Next slide, please. Now, I'd like to introduce you to some other pastors whom I have gotten to know over the decades. The pastor Stefan Hart in Leipzig. He is 60 years old. He grew up in the former East Germany. And at the time of the peaceful revolution in East Germany, he was very involved in sponsoring prayer services in one of the large churches in Leipzig. People would gather on a Friday evening for a prayer service, and then after the prayer service, they would go out onto the streets of Leipzig. They would bring their prayer with them There could be peaceful change, be a call for democracy under the conditions of communist East Germany. Next slide, please. This is the church, and if any of you go to Leipzig, you will surely see this site. It symbolizes the beginning of the peaceful revolution that took place in 1989. As I say, people gathering weekly for a prayer service and then spilling out into the streets, gathering with candles, calling for peaceful change. Next slide, please. Here, the interior of the church, and this is obviously in the pre-pandemic days when people could still crowd in. Next slide. And here, where they would then spill out into the street afterwards in a posture of prayer with a hope. They didn't have weapons. They didn't have a mass movement that had political representation. They couldn't vote for an oppositional party, but there was the hope the prayer brings. They scattered like salt into the society around them, bringing the hope that peaceful change would be possible. And miraculously, it did become possible in the fall of 1989, as the Berlin Wall fell on November 9th, 1989, and then almost a year later on October 3rd, as I say, the peaceful reunification of East and West Germany. Next slide. Well, what does it mean to be salt today? This is something that Pastor Bickhart has thought a great deal about. The heady days of 1989 are all over. In West Germany, one nation, seemingly business back to usual. No need for people to spill out into the streets and call for peaceful democratic change. Nevertheless, Pastor Bickhart has continued the work of sponsoring and leading a weekly prayer service, a time where people can simply step into the church, away from the busyness of the city, stand before the altar, light candles, and pray. Something as simple as that, seemingly something without great power or significance. And yet it did make a difference in 1989, and Pastor Bickhart believes it still makes a difference today. It doesn't take a lot of people, but people who regularly pray are people with hope. And I think that's something interesting to think about, that prayer is not just something individual. It's not just something personal, it is that, but prayer as a way of testifying to hope, prayer that strengthens people to be salt in their society. Even if now it's only 30 or 40 or 50 people who gather each week, they want to carry this light into their society. They want to be people of hope in a society that is often so self-centered, such as ours, so centered on how do I get ahead? How do I achieve? How do I compete against others? The gift of prayer as a place for nurturing a different kind of hope, a hope that God is with us, that God opens horizons, gives us perspectives that otherwise we could not yet imagine. We don't know. We don't know what these new prayer services will bring. We can't see any direct connection to changes in German society today. because of the 30 or 40 people who gather each week. Nevertheless, Pastor Bickhart is convinced prayer is something that Christians as a people of hope continue to engage in. How can something as simple as a weekly prayer service be a place that radiates hope? So that's my first vignette. Let's look at a second. Next slide, please. Here's a second pastor that I was just with a week ago, Pastor Heiko Franke, and he lives in Dresden. Also 60 years old, also lived through the events of the peaceful revolution in East Germany, the reunification of Germany. And like Pastor Bickhart, Pastor Franke is a man of hope. He knows that Christians are a tiny minority in Germany today. There might be so many reasons to feel discouraged and disoriented, but here's the way in which he tries to spread hope. The next slide. He's director of what's called the Evangelical, the Lutheran Academy in the town of Meissen, in these historic buildings that have foundations dating back to the Middle Ages. The Evangelical Academy is a place that offers seminars for pastors for their continuing education, seminars for lay people to learn more about the faith. As I talked to Pastor Franke, he said the two questions that weigh on his mind are the following. First, how do we translate the gospel into the language of people today? Not simply translate it into German, but translate it into the living circumstances of people. Translate the gospel in a way that connects. This question, he thinks, is not yet answered. He doesn't have an answer, but he thinks it's the right question. And that's suggested for us. How do we find the right language to communicate the good news of Jesus Christ in our society that is increasingly non-churched, non-Christian, perhaps not hostile to Christianity, but also perhaps increasingly indifferent? And traditional language often doesn't connect. People associate the traditional language with the past, with what they think they already know and experience. What would it mean to find a new language, a language that translates the gospel for today?
I'm doing a seminar now.
All right. The second question that he thinks a lot about is, what is the shape of the church? What is the shape of Christian community in our new circumstances? What makes a church the church, a place where people from very different points of view can gather, be in communion with one another? He thinks these are the two questions that pastors and lay people in Germany need to think about today, how to translate the gospel into the living circumstances of German society, and how to be church, a place of genuine, deep communion and fellowship among people who come from very different points of view. Next slide, please. So the many seminar rooms where in the course of the year, there are dozens of seminars, of retreats where people ponder these two questions, translating the gospel and living as reconciled church community. Next slide. And Pastor Franke with some local pastors of small village churches It's especially hard ministry in Germany today. Many of the small village churches have virtually no members, no one who comes on a Sunday morning. Often a pastor may have as many as 10 or 15 village churches to take care of. How does a Christian show hope under those very difficult circumstances? And yet the hope that the gospel can be translated into the language of people today, the hope that even in a small village, there can still be a gathering that is genuine Christian community. Next slide. Here's also one of Pastor Franke's projects. These are lay people, and they go through a program of training to be readers in the church. That is to participate in Sunday worship and the training it takes to read the gospel, to read the scriptures aloud. We might take that for granted, but actually in the German church, there's a great deal of attention given to how to read the scriptures in worship so that one communicates them clearly, understandably. Questions of which translation to use, questions of how to use one's voice. These lay people want to be good communicators of the gospel, and they go through this training over a number of weekends, and here they're celebrating their successful completion. I think that's also a very interesting idea for our churches in the United States. We take for granted, perhaps, that people can read aloud in worship or be worship leaders. But what would it mean to actually gather people to think about what they're doing as they read the scriptures and to read the scriptures with understanding and conviction, as well as with vocal clarity? So this is his special hope, Pastor Franke's special hope, that this work of theological reflection, liturgical preparation, again, seemingly so insignificant in a largely secularized society, that nevertheless, people such as this can be salt, can communicate Christian hope, hope that the scriptures bring into focus this God who is God with us, and therefore, it's worth reading the scriptures with care and with understanding so that that hope can be more clearly communicated. All right, our next slide. Well, this is the pastor of the church where I'm located today in this town, Marktleuten. This is Pastor Ralf Haska. Also someone whom I've gotten to know over the years. And I'd like to talk now, give you this third example of what it means to be salt, what it means to witness to a hope that transcends the hopes of this world, that points to this hope that Christians call God with us in Jesus Christ. Next slide. Well, before Pastor Haska came to Marktleuten, he's a German, but he spent several years as pastor of the Lutheran Church in Kiev in the Ukraine. And he was there during the Peaceful Revolution of 2013-2014, as Ukrainians called for democracy, as they took a stance against Russian manipulation of politics in Ukraine. Pastor Haska played an important role of witnessing in that context to the hope for new possibilities, for new horizons. Next slide. As the protests on the Maidan, the great central square of Kiev, intensified in 2013, increasingly it came to clashes between protesters and the police. Imposter Haska, being a man of hope and reconciliation, so you see here in this picture, at one point he actually went into the streets and stood between the protesters and the police to call for nonviolence, to keep them from clashing. That took a great deal of courage. It was a very tense and dangerous time in Ukraine. He was not the only priest or pastor to try to stand between the two fronts, but this picture symbolizes what all of them were doing, and this was a very dramatic picture that was publicized widely throughout Germany. I think it takes people of hope to say, I can stand between the fronts, that the most important thing is not violence and political pressure, but to bring about dialogue. And yes, also justice, change. It's not that he was neutral, but he knew that the way forward, the way of Christian hope, is a way that cannot be won through violence, but takes patience and determination to overcome the entrenched polarization. Next slide. Well, that's really something to actually live through two revolutions. He lived through the peaceful revolution in East Germany, the fall of the Berlin Wall, and then to live through the peaceful revolution in Ukraine. And then to come to this small town in this part of Germany, north of Munich. I asked him, I said, isn't that quite a come down? It was so dramatic in those months in 2013 and 14. What's it like to be just a normal town pastor? Does it seem boring? Does it give you satisfaction? And without hesitation, he said he was thankful for the opportunities that each of his parishes had given him, even as now he left Kiev and came back to Germany. This is a town of about 3,000. I was in church this morning. There were probably 70 people there. And Pastor Haska preached about the miracle of the reunification of Germany and how Germans can give thanks that God was at work in those events. No one could have predicted them. No one could have programmed the fall of the communist government. No one knew what the future would bring, but Christians had this hope that God is at work in history, opening new perspectives. Christians can be salt. They don't have to be large in number, but they bring hope into their society that things can be better. Things can be more human. There can be a humanistic concern for one another. To make that witness of hope in the midst of societies that often have people who feel so hopeless, so despairing, wondering if there really is any kind of future. So even today, even in a prosperous Germany, people need this witness that there's more to life than just getting along day to day. The church that can keep opening wider perspectives to people, to the new challenges of our time, whether that's welcoming new immigrants, or as we'll see in a moment, something as simple as opening a kindergarten. So next slide. So recently, Pastor Haska signed an agreement with the city to have the church open a church kindergarten. This has been a very interesting phenomenon in the New Germany, especially in the eastern part of the country, that churches, many churches, the number of church kindergartens has exploded since the reunification of Germany. That people see the church as a reliable place to entrust their children. As Mark Leuten, as this town slowly grows again, there's been a need to have a larger kindergarten, and people trust the church to be a place that cares for their children. Again, I think this is salt, this is hope, this is witness. Many of our American churches have kindergartens, and maybe we just take for granted that this is a good thing that Christians can do. It's a service to our society. But this is, to me, quite amazing that in a part of the world where Christians are such a minority, they're opening kindergartens that are religious, where the kids will pray before meals, where the day will open with a short service, where Pastor Haska will come and occasionally celebrate a worship service on a special day. The way we treat our children and the way we reach out into society to children is a reflection of what hope we have or don't have for our future. And that churches here take such an active role in sponsoring church kindergartens. It's a little bit of salt. It's a little bit of hope. It's a little bit of witness to God with us. Next slide. So this is the old kindergarten. It's going to be torn down so that a larger kindergarten can be constructed on the site. This new kindergarten that will accommodate nearly twice as many kids and be probably the primary kindergarten for everybody in the village, whether they go to church or not. But they trust the church. They entrust their kids. They somehow sense that the church is a place of hope. Next slide. So the hope we have for our children. But for Christians, the hope that they will also know that they are finally in God's hands. Next slide, please. The children that gather under the shadow of the church, our hope, the salt that we want to give our children that they can bring with them into the world. Next slide. All right, and finally, Pastor Susanna Weichenhahn, also an experienced pastor in her mid-60s, also who grew up in Eastern Germany and has served small churches and large, and the special hope that she brings to her people as a Christian. Next slide. So she has been pastor of a major historical church building here in Potsdam, the Nikolai Church, beautiful central tourist point as well as congregation. Next slide. But a number of years ago, she decided to leave that major congregation, that historic place, and to become pastor in a small town again, in Treuenbrietzen, a church that has certainly many years of history behind it, but not many people who come on a Sunday morning. But she made this conscious decision to go into the countryside, to go into a smaller town, and to bring her hope, the special hope that she has, to be salt. Next slide. Well, she is particularly interested in this figure, Paul Gerhardt, a Lutheran pastor from the early 17th century. And Paul Gerhardt composed something like 300 or 400 different hymns, a number of which are in our own Presbyterian hymnal to this day, and many more are sung by Lutherans. Paul Gerhardt lived through the 30 Years' War in Europe, where many towns were devastated, burned to the ground, where the different Christian confessions fought against each other. It was a time certainly as deeply polarized or even more polarized than our era. The suspicion, the anger, and among Christians, between Catholics and Protestants, between Reformed and Lutheran, the church at that time, not as a place of reconciliation, but of political polarization. Paul Gerhardt, in his hymnody, set forth the hope of Christ, the hope of God with us, the hope for reconciliation through songs, through hymns that have endured through the ages. Next slide. So Pastor Weichenhahn is now president of the Paul Gerhardt Society, society that promotes his music, his hymnody, with choirs, with concerts, as a form of witness that the hope of Paul Gerhardt in the 17th century can give people hope today, a vision of a world of peace where the lion and the lamb lie down together. Next slide. And so as you can see here, again, pre-pandemic days, but dozens of people who gather under the auspices of the Paul Gerhardt Society to sing the hymns of Paul Gerhardt. And not all of them are regular churchgoers, and yet somehow his hymnody is salt, gives people hope. They leave the church, maybe sensing that God in a mysterious way is with us. God is at work. God is opening joy, peace, freedom, new perspectives on life. Okay, well, that's the end of my vignettes, my four vignettes. Ted, that's the end of the slideshow, I believe. And I welcome any questions and comments. But I hope these four vignettes have given you a sense of the hope that Christians, even as a minority, can still bring to their society, that they can be a people who pray, a people who think about how to translate the gospel and be the church, a people who have hope for their children, and the people who sing the praises of God. Things we take for granted, things that most of our churches in some manner do, but how important they continue to be a salt, even in the midst of societies that are changing. All right, well, I welcome any comments or questions.
So please unmute if you're online, and anybody who has comments here in the chapel, I'm here roving with a microphone. Charlotte.
John, thanks so much for your comments. I've come away with more than enough questions. The first one was, how do you see the distinctions between Germany and the US? And then the second one had to do with how we extrapolate from Germany to the US, but I think I want to pick up on one of your later comments and use the word indifference. Hope certainly is a challenge to indifference, but it seems to me that in order to keep moving forward and to sustain the church into a future and not just have these wonderful buildings as memorials to a time past, we really have to think about the way in which the church will pivot, if I can use that term. And I think you've given us some examples, but could you comment any further on that?
Well, you're absolutely right. And in some ways, the buildings are actually an albatross. You know, they require so much attention, money, administration. I've actually heard some people say, some German pastors, the day is going to come when the church buildings will have to become historical memorial sites maintained by the state so that Christians are free to focus on their mission. So that's a very arresting thought in a place like Europe where the buildings mean so much to people historically. But I think that shows you the challenge that increasingly Christians in Europe will have to set aside their buildings, let them be, let them continue to exist as these great memorials to the past, but actually to be freed from the burden of maintaining these buildings so that they can concentrate on being people who are making contact, who are, you know, this is what it's going to take, actually reaching into society, not waiting for people to come into the building, but finding ways to reach into society, to invite people into the life of at least visiting a church, at least being in contact with Christians, knowing that Christians are not just oddballs and religious fanatics. And so this is why things like kindergartens are one way that the church reaches people that would never come into a church building to a worship service. And yet something happens there, some communication of the gospel, even if in a very inchoate way, the hope that people sense that they can entrust their children to the church. These are the kinds of strategies that will have to be developed to move away from the church as a historical memory to experiencing the church in its witness to hope. But yes, it's going to take many different strategies. There's no one way to do it. And as I've given you here, these four vignettes, things as simple as a weekly prayer service that is a quiet time, a time where people leave the busyness of the city and enter into a different space. Things such as kindergartens or singing the hymns of Paul Gerhardt or teaching people how to read the scriptures with conviction and understanding and worship. These are the little steps. I think it's a time of not great strategies and plans, but of little steps, tactical measures to show the church's hope to a wider society. But yes, the question you posed is exactly the one that people are trying to be responsible to today.
Anyone online have a question? Please do pipe up, unmute yourself. Doug here has one.
I would just like to comment and thank you so much for this very timely message that you're bringing. As I think back about many Sunday school lessons and life experiences, one of the aspects, which is really, really important, but one of the aspects of Jesus' ministry, he came to reconcile man and God. And we so quickly forget that central purpose, even as we help others, even as we preach the gospel, even as we reach out to others. We, I think, forget that central message to reconcile. And if there's any more timely time than now, I don't know what it would be, because those who try to reconcile these days find themselves between two alternatives. And that's not where we belong. We simply belong in reconciling. And I deeply appreciate your comments.
Thank you very much for your comments. And I think that's so right, that Christians will be able to be a reconciling presence only if they experience the reconciling power of God in Christ. I mean, that's the central message of the gospel. This, we have no hope except the hope that's been given to us. And without that hope, we cannot be people who radiate a different way of life into society. So that's why something as simple as a weekly prayer service, as modest and seemingly insignificant as it seems, can be a place for some people to remember week after week the deeper meaning of life, the hope, the reconciliation that's been given to us under the cross. Spirituality and action cannot be separated. Spirituality can become escapism if it does not issue into activity, but activity becomes busyness and finally burns out unless it's grounded in this deep hope of reconciliation through Christ that you've mentioned. So I think that's so true, and remains at the center of Christian witness. Christians dare not become discouraged when they become the minority, but that becomes all the more the reason to focus on the central message of God's reconciliation.
Now, this is Chip Staub, and it's, as was mentioned, there's many parallels to our service this morning. Ed Suter, who is our youth minister, and he gave statistics similar to what you're suggesting, that less than half the nation now is Christian, professes to be Christian. But one of the things that he also, as part of the sermon, at least that I picked up on, was when you looked at a lot of the things that are being done in Germany, the age of the folks there are 60s. The ministers you pointed out are 60 or above. It's the things that are being done sort of come back from tradition. And one of Ed's themes this morning was there has to be a new language, at least, and he's, I'm sure, bringing it from the perspective of a pastor who's focused on youth of the church. And this whole concept of a new language that maybe, who knows what that language is. You did mention kindergartens, which Westminster also shares that as a place where folks can be introduced to the church there. But I'm not sensing in what you're saying, and that's a demographic that are too young to really understand, perhaps at that age, to take the next step. Do you sense anything in Europe where folks that are in their 30s, pastors that are in their 30s, are trying to do something, as Ed said this morning, with a new language, a completely different approach to delivering the message?
Right. Well, when I introduced you to Pastor Franke, I mentioned that he thinks translation of the gospel is one of the major questions. What does it mean to translate the gospel today into the language of the people? And then what does it mean to be reconciled church community? Those are the two questions that are burning. And unfortunately, or maybe we just have to say that we don't know yet. We're living through a time of transition. We know the question without yet knowing the answer. But the fact that the question is out there, that we know we've got to struggle deeply with that question, that the traditional forms may or may not reach into a new generation. It's something where it's going to take patience and experimentation. And so, no, I don't have an answer. I don't think European Christians have an answer, but they know the question. They know, as you say, that that's the question we've got to struggle with. I think the one answer that they give is the new language will be a language not simply of words, but that people will look at Christians and see what I've been calling the special hope. Many people in a secular society have little hope. They may hope for a while in politics, but then they grow cynical. They may have hopes for their children, but then their children disappoint them. They may have hopes for their work and advancement, but the day comes that they hit limits. And that Christians have a hope that goes beyond any of those hopes, that there's a reconciling God. How do we give witness to that in the way that we live? In the joy, the sense of hope, of not becoming cynical, of being open to the new possibilities that God may be inviting us into. I think in many ways, while we're searching for that new language, we can at least have this kind of posture, this posture of joy, hope, openness, welcoming the new things that God may be doing. But in short, no, I can't point to specific programs where I would say this is something that we can translate into the North American context. But the question is there, and how at least we can live in a way that people say, you have hope. You have a hope that goes beyond anything that we have previously experienced.
I have a question online. Yep, John?
I may make a comment. I'll try to make it brief. When I saw that pastor standing between the crowd and the police, I got this sense that he was the church. He was a pillar that stood on the margins where the conflict exists and where people's feelings are focused. And the church, if it has that role to be on the margins, not in a comfortable place of memories, but what is the spiritual conflict now? Maybe they could learn something from Bob Dylan, who had the song, "How many roads must a man walk down before they call him a man?" I mean, people responded to that. He articulated the very margin where conflict is and where healing is needed. You know, I woke up this morning and I had this conviction that America has lost its mind. So something needs to be articulated of hope, of some way out of this, some way forward, some way up, some way of joining. And that's what the church's role is. So I don't see the church as a building. I don't see it as a group with a certain population. I see it as a spiritual thing where I don't know where it is, and we need a form. So the form could be a kindergarten. The form could be a garden. The form could be something else that joins people at the margin where they're separated, where you have a crowd, a mob wanting to attack and police who want to beat down. But there's this courageous pastor who stood there as a spire, a spiritual spire between them. He was the church.
Right. And of course, those were heady days, but what does it mean then to be that same pastor and say, we'll take up the challenge of being a kindergarten that will have kids who are representative of the whole diversity of our town? There'll be Muslims in this kindergarten. There will be non-churched kids in this kindergarten. There will be kids who were baptized but never were brought to church again. And to be a place that bridges, where parents from all these different backgrounds who might not have anything else to do with each other during the week, except business relations, but that their children, the church steps into the gap between the fronts and in some mysterious way raises these children in the spirit of the gospel. I'm fascinated at how significant even a kindergarten can be in a time of such deep social and political polarization in our Western societies.
So, John, as you were talking about the 17th century and that time of sectarian strife and linking it to today in Germany when the church is marginalized, it's an increasingly secular society. And yet, all over the world, I'm reading from social scientists that we have a rising level of sectarianism, kind of independent from religion, although we typically think about sectarianism as religious in its roots, driven, they say, by alienation, aversion to people whom we disagree with, and then moralization that says that those people that we disagree with are morally wrong. So I'm wondering, in a context where the society is both increasingly secular and suffering from sectarianism, how can the church fit into that?
Yeah, well, those are our circumstances, aren't they? And, you know, the little bit that I have learned and am trying to communicate is there is no big, obvious program to apply. It's these little steps of demonstrating hope where others see hopelessness. So that is the different witness I think that Christians can make in these deeply polarized and increasingly secularized societies. People, and this is always the human condition, isn't it? We tend to entrench ourselves in our own positions, to watch out for our own interests, to guarantee our rights over against others. And all of that has its place, but there's something that Christians bring that goes beyond that. It's this witness to a God who has created us, who wishes to bring about among us a new way of life, a reconciled way of life. I think in the Christian witness under those circumstances is as essential, more essential than it's ever been. And that we not get discouraged even in our smallness. We not throw up our hands because we feel disoriented. The foundation that prayer gives, not to take that for granted. The real strength that gathering with a few other Christians on a weekly basis to, as I have pointed out, pray, light candles, be quiet. That too, in its own quiet way, makes a witness that there's a God, and that God is seeking a new way of life for us. So I guess, Ted, I don't have there is no easy answer. You put your finger on the real challenge before us today. My little bit of teaching in the Sunday school series has been to share with you some of the salt that I've experienced in Germany. Germans would be as equally interested in the salt that a Westminster can spread, can represent. In the years ahead, we're going to need each other more than ever to figure out the way ahead.
I know good closing words when I hear it. And so I'm going to stop the recording and say thank you very much. This has been excellent. We can continue the conversation after the recording stops.
Thank you so much. Look forward to seeing some of you in May.